Welcome to Ever Beyond, 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 on Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Of September 2014. This is Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio, on Ever Beyond Radio, and I'd like to welcome you all to tonight's live presentation. We did have a recording just going there with myself and Katie Glanty from a few weeks ago. Still quite relevant, I think. Tonight, my guests are the perennial, we discovered the perennial alchemists. We are always searching forward. Everybody's looking for stuff. There seems to be a fervor of new research into new science right now. Somebody's knocked down a fence somewhere, and we're exploring a new bit of land. My guest tonight, my host and colleague Nancy Hopkins, and with deep respect and joy to bring you in here, Walt from the Earth Mind Earth Healers group, Walt Silver. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Jack.
Hello, JP. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Walt. Hi, everybody.
Hey, Nancy.
Hey, so that's a lovely picture you've got there, Walt, on your Skype thing. It's a black lion, is that right?
Yeah, that's the closest I could find that looks like the spirit of Shanghai. Too bad you can't see the eyes. I have to keep looking.
Well, this is really interesting, because my girlfriend, Nikki Wolfbaby, was talking about a visitation she got from a Shanghai being the other day. Mm. So it's all quite interesting. We seem to be meeting personifications these days.
Well, you know, you understand in the concept of shamanism that most people have at least one power animal. And in shamanism, that's one of the symptoms they look for. They always say, if a person, I'm sure there is a multitude of reasons, but one of the symptoms of a person losing their power animal is states of depression, states of illness, because it is the job of the power animal to keep you, to keep your energy whole, to keep you healthy, to keep you strong, to give you guidance. So when you lose it for whatever reason, people come down with physical symptoms of some kind of illness. Granted, by now everyone knows that there's so many different sources, you know, past life, parallel life, you name it. But in this concept of the power animal, I'm beginning to get to feel more and more that as humans have power animals, this could very well be the power animal of Gaia herself, being sent out there to do this monumental task.
I think you're limiting Gaia. I suspect that this is one version of her, because I'm getting through Gene, through Gene and other people, that perhaps the Raven is also another variant of the Shanghai spirit. Because of the shape shifting.
It's not limited, correct. It's not limited. I mean, quite the contrary. It could take any form or no form at all. It's so capable and so multidimensional.
Right. So people, if you're finding some animal that seems to, you're seeing pictures of of the lion, because this lion is actually, Jay, this is actually a real lion, this black lion he's got the photo of.
Oh, yeah, 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 I can see it. It's not a Photoshop or anything. It is a lion with black fur. I've seen a few of these things. There, you get these lovely white lions as well. It'd be nice to see anyway, I'm sorry.
but the animal kingdom, I'm going to diverge just a little bit here because one of the people that I have a real affinity for is Gene Rockefeller, who has a horse, Jack. And Gene is known for being able to communicate with animals. Over the last 3 years that I've known her, there have been episodes where I'd say, Gene, I don't know what's the matter with the dog. I don't know what's the matter with the cat. Can you help me out, you know? And she is dead on every time, gets it right on the nail, you know? So she's known for this. She was working in an animal refuge place, and she got a lot of experience just dealing with the animals there. But one day she started to telepathically pick up a message from her horse, which is a thoroughbred. She calls him Jack because one of the reasons that he's not didn't stay with the racing was that he had a bad eye. One of his eyes is not really good, so she named him Jack, as in, you know, one-eyed Jack. On the cards. So anyway, she started getting these messages, and Jack is telling her that, you know, you need to start a blog, and you need to call it Jack's Corner, and you need to let me tell you messages from the animal kingdom to the human kingdom. And this was back in 2011. I don't think we'd gotten into 2012 yet, but irregardless, what I found was that the courage that she had to actually accept this mission from Jack and then to go public with it, you know, I was in such admiration, because so many of us have these opportunities to sort of, like, you know, come out and say, look, I'm seeing this, and I myself think it's kind of crazy, but I'm seeing this, and it's like you say, Walt, they get into your head and they don't let it go, and you have to you have to follow their directions, otherwise you can't. It's always there, you know. All right, do it. But it does take courage to take that step, and so I had a great deal of admiration for her, and we began to email back and forth, because I basically told her I had a lot of admiration, and she came back and she said, there's so many days where I just think I'm absolutely crazy, and why did I, you know, even start this? But it's people like you that give me the courage to go on. So every time we come on the air like this, the three of us, and we say whatever comes into our minds, and we talk about it, and we philosophically discuss different aspects of life, and we scientifically get into sometimes maybe more detail than our listeners appreciate. But every time we do this and we commit to a new reality, we're actually creating the support group for everybody else out there. I mean, Jay, when we had when Ron called in on the last show that we did together, you know, this was a guy that I bet you he wouldn't have told that story, especially in public, before he started listening to us. Where, and others like us, there's so many other people out there that are taking the leap. So what I'm saying here is that when our listeners are out there thinking about what we're saying, it's like, we understand that some of the stuff we say is way out there for most people, but we've been living this for so long that we don't doubt it anymore. We've seen it work.
You know, that is so true. I came up against that the other night on a show that I was doing, and I said something that it was like completely normal to me, and it shocked the guy. It really pulled me up. I thought, oh, yeah, that's how far I've stepped away from the mainstream, that I can say something which shock a guy. So it really touched me that I did that, and that it showed how far I am, how far I've come, how far the mainstream is a lie. That's really the thing. How much of an illusion the whole thing is, the Matrix.
And I think people are understanding it. I really do believe that we've gone past the 100th monkey threshold. I think that people are getting it. I'm seeing too much of a, you know, people that I never would have had conversations with, you know, initiating conversations about all sorts of conspiracy stuff, you know.
So I've got a new thing, Nancy. All right, and it came up in a conversation the other day, and I think it's just very appropriate. Conspiracy therapy. Basically, Wolf Spirit Radio is conspiracy therapy because it tells you everything that you've suspected is actually true and is not a lie.
Yeah, or there's a group of people on the radio that are as crazy as you are. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's right. That's possible.
Know? But at least it's a group that you can feel comfortable with.
That's
because
right. As you say, the more crazies there are, as long as the crazies can agree, then it creates a new reality.
That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. So, I'm so glad that we're on the voyage together because I can tell you one thing I know for sure. That we live a much more interesting life than the people that are living in the Matrix. Their lives are full of fear and oh my God, am I going to be able to pay the rent? And, you know, we have those same kind of considerations, but they don't dominate us. You know, it's like, yeah, we got to pay the rent. Let's ask Gaia to give us a little hand here. We have a support basis that goes beyond just us human beings. It goes into the animal kingdom, you know, like Jack and the Watchers. Animals that are there that you just look at them and you know that they've got more understanding and intellect than is even believable. It opens up the universe to us. You know, it's more exciting. It's like Walt said at one time, ecstasy is not boring.
Exactly. So, to this end, do you know what angel cards are?
Oh yes.
Yeah, you've come across angel cards. They're like little, they're about 3/4 inch wide and about 2 inches long, and little, almost like a card, but it's about the size of a fortune cookie. And they have a little picture of like a cartoon of an angel of some kind, with a word written in a nice font that is you know the angel of this or the angel of this. So the one that I've had for a long time here is the angel of compassion. I like to carry that and I like to sit that in front of me, you know, just like keep it in my mind and my heart all the time, just to keep going to the heart. So today's one was light, and to me light is light. So I'd like to talk about if you've ever come across Leviton generators, either of you.
Leviton generators?
No.
I have seen sound experiments to achieve levitation using sound waves, but very old black and white films of it that were done in the 50s.
All right, well, get this. Okay.
Mm. Well, can I just stop you right
there? Go ahead.
What, was that the ones they did in Poland?
I do not remember the location. All I remember is I can describe a scene from the film. They had a very large speaker type with a funnel type casing facing down upon a flat surface, like a table surface. And it wasn't audible because they were using very low frequencies. And a gentleman shows up from the side. And he takes something in his hand. It looked something small, like a toothpick or something. And he very slowly placed it in the space about halfway between the flat surface and the hood of this giant speaker. And I guess somebody was off camera making some kind of adjustment. And he opened his fingers and let it go. And this little toothpick-looking object, I don't know if it was metal or wood, it was just floating there. And it was an experiment because there were the sound waves were actually colliding at that spot, coming from the sound waves bouncing off of the flat surface, and the sound waves coming down from the speaker, so it was levitating this object.
That made a standing wave.
Correct. So I don't know what was the object of it.
Well, What's interesting about standing waves is it creates these standing waves, and at the edges they call them nodes. And if you have a flat surface and you put dust there, that's where the dust would flow to. And so in those nodes, that's where reality gets created. That's where reality sits, because it sits in the nodes of the standing wave. And that's what those figures are, those chymatic glyphs that you make with sound. It's the standing wave that's produced that by that frequency that creates that form, that shape. I want to see things in 3D, though. Somebody's going
to... The chymatics, I remember seeing... One of the things that they found that was really fascinating, which also speaks a lot to the origin of certain languages... The doctor that did the chymatic experiment, they were some were done with sand, others were doing with a jelly-like substance, and like you said, he could generate like a 3D projection of a sound. What they found very interesting is that when they would try to visualize, for example, the sound of Om that's used in the Eastern traditions, the shape that appeared on the plate was very, very similar to the symbol of Om that they use in India to draw the, you know, it looks like almost like a letter 3, you know, with its curlicues and other details to it. So when they did the visualization of Om, it generated almost the same exact symbol that they used. So it made him think that maybe that was one of the origins of how this language originated, that the symbols they used for the sounds are actually representations of the sounds themselves. They're not arbitrarily designed because somebody thought, okay, it would be pretty to make this line here and this line here. No, it's actually a visualization of the sound. Because Sanskrit is, I think it has 56 unit sounds, and no two words have the same, because you know, in languages like Spanish and English, You have words that sound the same but yet have different meanings because they have different spelling. That doesn't happen in Sanskrit. There are no two words that sound the same and have different meanings because all the symbols are unique. So it tells me that it was maybe that the language sprung from a more enlightened age where there was a higher level of consciousness.
Non-Tower of Babel situation, I think.
True.
So that's very interesting. We also hear about the letters of Hebrew being projected through tetrahedral forms. So we've got sound. I love that Sanskrit story there. Well, that's lovely. And it's true. You know, we have English is like the most synonymous language. There's, you know, the same word means many things. You try looking up the word set. You know, it's amazing that anybody actually manages to learn it. You know, I've been steeped in it all my life. It's hard to get away from. But I think, actually, you know, now we're on the subject of language, this is something, you know, we've all been talking, you know, people have been talking in the sovereign movement and all this about your name and everything being a legalized fiction, or it's our name is stolen, in fact, and then used as a fiction to be traded against. The sound of our name has... What do you think about the way we reincarnate? Does our name sound the same no matter what our lifetime is, or does our name change, and why does it change? Any ideas, Nancy? Do you have an idea about that?
I don't think that the names of it seems to be very important, because I can remember a lot of details about past lives, but the names very seldom. If I know a name, it's because I've stumbled across it in 3D research. You know, it's not like, oh yeah, I was Jane so and so. You know, that doesn't seem to ever come into, and I've seen regression, quite a few regressions where the tranced person would be asked, what's your name? They were telling about a particular lifetime, what's your name, and they couldn't remember. So I doubt that names are that important. Otherwise, you would think that you'd be remembering them.
It could also have to do with the imprinting. In your case, for example, since, you know, reality is whatever you think it is, so in your reality, names are of little consequence other than a label so that people don't keep calling you, hey, Miss You, or hey, you, and they have something to address you by. But there's also, maybe it's culture-based, where there are cultures with their own reality where a name is super critical and it means something to them and it represents you, and to the point where in some traditions, for the longest time, that's why they used either a monastic name or some given name, because it was understood that if someone knew your true name, your real name, they would have access to your energy and they could manipulate you that way. Now, obviously, this goes back to a very old time when, you know, power over others, much like today, you know, it's so critical that everyone had to keep their name safe. Otherwise, they would be subjected to, I don't know, a spell or black magic or something. But I think it might have to do with that, with imprinting as to, in your reality, as you say, since reality is whatever you think it is. So if your name is very, you're very attached to an identity of what that name means for you, then yes, definitely, it's going to, the vibration of that name will have an impact in your reality. I mean, that was supposed to be.
Yeah, I think if the name, if you're a celebrity and the name is well known, I suspect that is power behind that name. George Patton, you know, I mean, it's like there's a power behind that name because we've attached a power to that name because we think of him as a powerful person. So, you know, certain names of individuals. But I mean, nowadays, it's not like you're saying where there was reason and rationale behind a name that was given to somebody. I mean, in the Native Americans, you got the name of the first thing that whoever was there saw after you were born. You know, Flying Eagle. Well, because they saw a flying eagle. You know, Running Bear, they saw a running bear. You know, that's how the names got attached to people. It was much more valuable because that, again, linked to who you are in that moment that you were born. It's much deeper than what we do now. Now, I told this story, probably not to you, Walt, but to Jay and the listeners. While I was writing Cosmic Reality, my brother...
I'm sorry?
He calls me up and he said...
What I was going to mention is that there is a, to build up on what JP said regarding the significance and the vibrations of names, this Canadian gentleman who brought the human design system to the world, who changed his name to Ra Uruhu, in his later years, I believe he passed this past year, he spoke of something that he found very interesting, is that, as people were evolving and changing, he was seeing more and more of the following. People were naming themselves. More and more people were changing their names to what they wanted. And to me, it lines up perfectly with the movement of sovereignty, you know, sovereign free will being. Okay, I'm a sovereign free will being. I'm going to name myself. This is going to be the vibration that represents me now, for however long this me is going to be in this body. And I think that's also something significant, that you are named something that you want to be named, not because you got saddled with a great uncle's name or grandfather's name or some grandmother's name, as in the old... In Argentina, they're still doing it. All children... Here's the interesting psychology in Argentina. All children get at least two names because the second name has to be either the father... Depending on the gender, obviously, it's going to be the father, mother, grandfather, or grandmother, or some other ancestor, right? And throughout all their life, they'll be known by a nickname. I mean, there are family members that have since passed And I ask my mother, you know, what was their name? And she will tell me, and these people had like three names and two last names, but all their life they were Paco or Pocho or something else. So I said to my mom, wow, if I had to look for these people in the cemetery, I'd never find them because I don't know what their name was. So there's a little bit of a, you know, other culture psychology there. I don't know why that happens, but it happens. And now, it's been happening now more than 20 years, I believe. Argentina, as you know, it's a Spanish culture. For years, when a woman married, her husband's last name would be appended to her last name. She wouldn't lose it like they happen in the U.S. She would just get an additional last name. Well, I'm told now that for 20 years now, people are getting married, but yet the woman does not take on the husband's name. She remains her name. And to me, it makes perfect sense. You know, why? What is this idea of changing an identity simply because you're going into a social contract with someone? So I guess because divorce is so common, I mean, that way they don't have to deal with the hassle of changing IDs and changing your bank accounts and getting, for whatever the reason, that's what they're doing now. So it maybe the name itself is not critical in any particular sense, but it is symptomatic of a change in consciousness, of a change in the energy, because after all, it is our label and we get to do with it whatever we want, right?
That's very interesting. Well, it's about the it's part of it is stepping up to it, isn't it?
You know, yeah,
living up to the name that you've given yourself. You know, some
like for example, in your case, for example, when you hear not you yourself saying it, but if somebody is addressing you or talking about you in your presence. And how do you resonate more? Do you resonate more with the vibration JP, or do you resonate more with Jeremy Perron? Because both of these sounds, even at the subconscious level, they're having, there's a vibration in your body, and your body is reacting to that vibration. Have you ever noticed the difference since you go by the two names?
Very much.
So, which one feels more like home, and which one feels more formal to you? You know.
Interesting. Well, JP seems more formal. It's like this is the way I'm going to introduce myself, when I'm referred to as J, it feels it's open. That's what it is. It's open. There are no. All right, I've always had a problem with, I mean, we all have issues with associations. And when you have a particular sound or a series of sounds, you associate it with. So there are certain names that have a certain association. And I've never had good associations with Jeremy.
Oh.
And people have been calling me JP since I was 12. And so I like that. It's less, there's no, what's the word? Baggage with it.
Oh.
You know? It's fresh. What's the word? It has no, I'm trying to think of the word. Is it, no, it's not connotation. It'll come to me. but do you see what I'm saying? It's kind of like a blank space. Actually, the fact that I, you know, I don't really matter. It's what I'm saying is that is important, and you know, everybody's got stuff, and we will have issues.
Does Jeremy have a lot of family energy with it? You know.
Yeah, there was a lot of negative judgment about it, so I'm not. It doesn't make me comfortable.
Well, Jay, since you made the change into your name, you've also changed the numerology of your name.
Exactly. Yeah, there's someone listening.
my brother was very interesting. He, oh gosh, I think he was in his 40s when he went for a job with the
Uh-oh.
Oh, Nancy, we've lost you.
Born on the 14th instead of the 15th. And so all his life, my mom had said, no, you're born on the 15th. And he's like, but Mom, this birth certificate says the 14th. Mom, no, it was the 15th. I don't care what the dang thing says. And she had all these reasons for it, what was on the TV, or I don't know what it was. But I asked him after the fact, because, of course, now he knows that his official birthday is different. I said, well, let me ask you something. I said, since you have a change in just the birthday, the day, I said, has your life been different? And he said, oddly enough, yes. You know, and it was like, is it the numerology? Now you've got the right numerology working. I mean, who knows? Maybe there was a timeline change and all of a sudden the birth certificate is different. You know, I mean, because when we talk about the language and the letters and then, you know, you're really talking about frequencies, but you're also talking about numbers. And again, it all holds together.
And
so,
harmonics.
You know, you freed yourself by giving yourself your own name, and not only did you change the audible concept of your name and the visual concept of your name, but you changed the numerology of it.
Exactly. Changed the vibration of it. And but it's, you know, like I said, I've been known by this for a long time. It's not like I'm, it's like I'm stepping out of what everybody expects, in a way. I don't know. I really, it's fresh. It's just like a blank slate. It means I've got no limits. I think where we're going, we need no limits. It's really about not identifying with it so much. Who cares what I'm called? Really. We're souls, aren't we? As you were saying, Walt. You know, it really doesn't matter that much.
Or well, maybe it does.
I've shared this.
You know, let me just tell you that.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's easy because I'm not sure. I may not be hearing all you're saying, Walt.
Yeah, you're slightly on a delay, Nancy.
Okay.
It seems you're slightly on a delay. So give Walt, and then you come in.
Okay.
Just a quick thing that in my case, names, in what I do, that I have to do the shamanic journey for a person to ask from their guides if they need any of the stuff that I make, and if they do, what is it? I've shared this with many of the ladies, is that I need to have their maiden name. When I do the journey and I ask for the guides of such and such, I use their married name, it's like I get no response. There's like a blank wall. And yet when I go back and call for the guides of such and such with their, you know, their native name, their birth name, they're right there. So it made me think that, well, maybe on the other side there's no such thing as marriage contracts. Everybody is who they are. I don't know if it's my psychology. I mean, I don't particularly care what you call yourself, but it actually affects my ability to connect with their guides or not.
Yeah, that was a really interesting thing, because for a while I was married, and there was a Mrs. Perron, and it was just the weirdest thing. I don't think I could have coped with it. She couldn't cope with it, because her name was much nicer, had a much richer sound. Her name was Henderson, which is a really rich sounding name.
Well, to me, Perron is a Spanish word. It means large dog.
Large dog.
Yeah, if you put the accent on the last syllable, Perron, a Perron is a very large dog.
What kind of dog is it?
Well, you know, whenever you see, you know, dogs come in different sizes and forms, and if you see one that's very large, you would exclaim, oh, que Perron, what a large dog.
All right, so in like the Great Dane class of dog, you know, the big
there.
Dog.
Yeah.
What do they call them? Giant. I think they call them actually giant dogs. You know, sorry.
Well, have you ever seen a Newfoundland dog?
Oh, yeah. What a good.
My goodness, they're large.
I had a girlfriend a few years ago who was a dog shower, and I was introduced to all sorts of classes of creature. She had herself wolfhounds, Irish wolfhounds, big things. And and we went to dog shows, and she, you know, that she, because she said you should, you'd love a Newfoundland, and I really did. I mean, what a fluff, what a butterball, what a gorgeous creature, eh?
Feeding it, I'm sure, is quite a budget.
I'd probably have to feed it a chicken every day. Here you go, here's tasty. Yeah, and that's why I don't have dogs, and I've got chickens. They're so much easier to feed. Mm. And they are comedy. I just love it. I just love it. We were just sitting in the garden. Nikki and I had restored my. There was a bench, park bench, that was all gnarled and crooked and crossed and fallen apart, and we fixed it up this weekend, and we were just singing it, and then we were seeing this little entourage of the chickens, and they all leave at the same time, they all go like on a journey, and then they sort of waddle away, and then you know, 20 minutes later they all waddle back, and they really make a presence in the garden, like, oh yeah, here we are, the chicken gang. So that's my life. It's really quiet.
You're the chicken wrangler.
Oh, yeah, but you know, I'm a townie. I was born in the middle of London, you know. And so for me, this whole thing is an adventure in like, oh look, it's the good. We used to have this TV show called The Good Life, and it was wonderful. It was a really lovely TV show about a couple who, in a suburban village, tried to do the self-sufficient thing.
If I may ask, what took you from London to Scotland?
Mrs. Henderson. Mrs. Perron. Actually, no. Who took me? The Buddha took me out of London, and Mrs. Perron took me out of Wiltshire, and we arrived in Scotland, and then we divorced, and I'm still here, and she's somewhere else. Yeah. She's away.
How do you pronounce the town you're in? It's Fors or
Fors?
Forest.
Almost like forest, which is not surrounded by. It's like these towns that they're not hard. You know, there's a town just along the road that is named after a wall, and it's called Dyke. Mm. And indeed, the little house that I live in is called Dykeside, because it's beside a wall that didn't work when the floods came. It's a flood prevention wall. That's what a dyke is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work.
Unknown in North Dakota.
It's totally useless. You know, because I was wondering, you know, when I moved here, there was this field, and by the side of this field, there's this pile of rock and concrete and cobble, and like, what the heck's that?
Well, isn't there a landmark in Britain called Hadrian's Wall, and people laugh that it's only like 3 feet high?
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of, it never used to be so low, but it's kind of, you know, stuff has built up around it.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it doesn't take much to stop a horse. Well, I suppose. You can jump over. You can't come over with carts. You know, it would be difficult to trade. You'd have to meet with somebody else and rendezvous and transfer their stuff. So it doesn't take much to stop trade, does it? Meanwhile,
when last we left our heroes.
So, our alchemical conspiracy therapists. I do like that idea, conspiracy therapy. It's like you're not alone. There are
That's the ODD group that Nancy mentions in her book.
That's true. So, where were we? I was talking about chickens.
Okay, you started dogs. With levitation. You were
levitation,
asking,
yeah, levitons. That's levitons.
How, yes, and then we ended up talking about the blah, blah, blah.
Thank you, Nancy. Somebody was holding the point. Yeah, anyway, the leviton generator. Let me tell you about the leviton generator. This is when I was in Glastonbury, and I was asked to make something like 50 pyramids, head pyramids, right? So I would weld them, and... I've still got one. You see it on my website. And it's it's made from bronze, silicon bronze, and it's about 9 inches on the side and about 7 inches tall, and you can stick it on your head if you wanted to. But anyway, we did something different this time. I was asked to take 7 pyramids and solder them together in a line, okay? So like I would have a strip of pyramids. And then...
Jay, just let me interject here.
Go ahead.
How big were these pyramids? I'm not getting the picture. How
Sorry,
big are
they? They're 9 inches on a side. So imagine a square 9 inches by 9 inches. And that's made of bronze, like a welding rod, in fact. So it's 1/8 of an inch, 3 millimeters.
So they were just frame pyramids, or they had a solid side?
No, frames. And they were about 7 inches tall.
About 7 inches tall? Or something like
that. So you created a reticulate.
A what?
A reticulate. A structure made of like a electrical tower. It's a reticulate, because like a trellis type, you know, you're soldering all the pieces together.
Yes. Yeah, so it's just like a wire frame. Essentially like a wire. Yeah, a thick wire. So so 7 of those in a line. So edge to edge, that they would form like a strip, okay? And then 2 added to the second one down. Okay, so it's almost like a cross, but it's just like a very small one either side of the second one down. And
so it's a cross with a very very short cross beam.
Yeah, very little kind of tip cross thing going. So then we string up the corners and string up the tops. With piano wire, quite strong wire, and then bring up the tension, and it's like you kind of bring up the tension like a bow, and it bows these pyramids. Okay, does that make sense? So instead, now the middle of the strip has raised up from the floor, and it's now in a like a bow, like an arch.
Oh, so they were being connected underneath.
Yes, well, they're being connected by from the flat side of the pyramid, so the pointed side goes out on the curve of it, and the inner side is forms a kind of smoothish curve.
Okay, now did you attach all these together, or are they on some kind of a cloth or something? They're just attached.
They're
together?
They're soldered to each other, the edges to the edge.
They're soldered to each other, and there's that much bend in it, so the whole structure is bending?
There's not much bend. There's a lot of tension. So they'll form...
So you're taking the ends of this strip of pyramids that are soldered together, and you're pulling them up so that the each end is coming up, is being pulled up, so that the middle of it is now in a bow type of situation.
Yeah. Like a brontosaurus back. Yeah,
that's so it's bowing up, not bowing down.
Yeah, it's bowing up.
Okay.
Okay, so, like a brontosaurus back, the way the points stick out, that's what I'm saying, is the way the points of the pyramid all stick out. Okay, so you've got one of these, right? And then you stand it up so that the vertical part, or it's like a satellite dish, right? And I'm not kidding, right? I just assembled one of these things, and... my Treya said, this is a Leviton generator, and I've just assembled it, and into the garage walks my, as I say, future wife. And without saying anything, she just said to me, oh, wow, I feel like jumping for joy. I'm not kidding, that is exactly what she said. And I had no, she'd never seen this thing before. She didn't know what it was. But she just felt the energy of it. It made her feel like jumping for joy. And that, he said, was a Leviton generator. And that's how you make one.
And how did you use it?
Well, if you need to go through a situation where you're facing a lot of negativity, you surround yourself with one of these things, and you go about your task.
So you hang it up on a wall, or you hang it from the ceiling as a decorative item?
You kind of stand them. Well, yeah, well, okay, so here's the system that he had. He had a pyramid, and the pyramid was made of copper, and it was a Cheops pyramid, 7 feet 6 long on the square. And he's sitting inside that, and on top of the pyramid is the capstone, which has got the, this is a solid copper sheet, all right, that's about, that's the same size as these little 9-inch pyramids, so that's sitting on top. So on top of that, imagine you take four more pyramids, the same size, and you solder them together, and you make the sides of a cube. And then you have another one on top. Okay?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay? So you have that one sitting on top of the capstone. Okay, so that's really generating a very positive vortex. And then you have four of these Leviton generators, north, south, east, and west of your pyramid. Okay, so they're just pouring lightness into the center of the pyramid where this vortex is whipping the whole thing up.
And you're not selling these things?
I know how to make them.
It's not illegal, is it?
Huh?
It's not illegal, is it?
No. No. It's,
wow.
What made you make it to begin with, Jay?
He asked me.
Who asked you?
Maitreya.
Who?
Maitreya, my teacher.
Your teacher asked you, just said, build this so that, I mean, so it was... Yeah. It was a teaching tool, basically.
Well, it was a working tool, but I was his student, and so that was one of the tasks that he set me to make this thing. You know.
And where is it now?
Oh, it's all broken up. I've still got, actually, I'm holding now in my hand one of the pyramids that, it's a bit battered, but that this was one of the pyramids from the Leviton generator itself. That's all that's left. After 20 years ago and moving house a lot and only getting one out of it anyway, but it was dismantled after it was used, but I've come across these systems before, and have you come across a book by a man named Randall Baer, B-A-E-R?
No. No, I have not. Who is he? What's he do?
He was one of the templates that Maitreya's tools are built from, he was the person that that he cited. You know, this check out Randall Baer, and apparently Randall sort of brought this book out turned into a evangelical Christian and denied the whole thing. But it's like the standard textbook on crystal mechanics. He's probably probably an Atlantean crystal fellow. Oh, Atlanteans! Don't talk to me about Atlanteans.
Yeah, no. Why do you suppose that happens to somebody?
What well, people get scared. People get threatened. I don't know. People have all sorts of reactions to things that you and I might find normal. Let's put it that way. You know, I really felt that the other day. That's what I was saying.
Or is it something more? And the reason I'm asking this is that myself and a few others have been noticing a peculiar tendency. Let's say it might have been there before, but for some reason we're now noticing it. I don't know when it really started up. But one friend said, I feel like I'm going to step at us. What is it? Wives.
Stepping wives.
Stepping wives. I never had to pronounce it, I guess. That people are acting almost robotic, almost like they're shells of their former selves, that they don't have soul. And I was like, you know, what is this? Because I started to ask people, and they're all going, yeah, I've noticed that. What is it? And we discovered, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. But the other day I was asking my guides and I said, what is this thing? And what I got was that the timelines right now are so malleable that they're shifting very, very quickly, just by minute and sometimes by big jumps. But there's a lot of this feeling that the timelines are shifting. And I think that they're shifting because there is more and more of this type of energy device like you just described, Jay, and that Walt's making and that other people are making, that every time somebody actually makes one of these things, they actually are altering time because you're altering the energies that are existing in this 3D local universe. And so what's happening is that, and this, I never would have thought about this, so it's probably true, because when something surprises you, when you ask a question and you get an answer that surprises you, it's probably not your imagination.
That's you're definitely not making that one up, are you? If it was predictable, you'd think, oh, well, yeah, I could have thought of that. Yeah. But if that's when it starts getting interesting, isn't it? So go on.
Yeah, you're absolutely like, what? You know? And this was one of those things, and it was Stepford Wives. It's Stepford Wives. That's what the word is. But what they said was that the timelines are shifting so fast that they're putting these kind of like soulless shells in place, and they are actually place markers on a timeline. So, for instance, if I'm on a timeline and suddenly the timeline shifts, but my energy is still maintaining the timeline that I'm on, then this other timeline that's already starting to happen, I'm not adjusting to. So to keep my place, because I'm going to adjust sooner or later, they put a figment of Nancy in the timeline. And then as Nancy, because one of the things that gets very difficult for people to understand is how can you have all these timelines? Are there multiple people? And it is sort of like multiple people, but it's almost like faceted, like if you had a diamond or a crystal that was cut so that you're putting light through it. You're putting it through the same element, the same device, but you're getting all these different energies off of it as light in the room. And that's sort of what I think of is what the bigger picture is of what's happening to us, is that we are these crystals, these wonderful crystals, that depending on how the light or the energy or the frequency around us is responding, is existing, our response throws out a different light beam. So, and that's why you have different multiple timelines that are changing all the time. And sometimes you go, man, I thought I knew that person, but I don't think I know that person at all. You know, because you're actually dealing with multiples. That's why nobody ever feels like they really know anybody, because you don't, because they keep changing. You keep changing. Everything keeps changing. And so for most people, it's much easier not to think about these things and to kind of stay in a limited space and a limited perspective and a limited reality and, oh, okay, this is what it is. For us guys, we like to play in this concept. And for the people that are out there with their eyes wide open and looking at the subtleties, you know, you can have a conversation like, are we in a Stepford Wives movie? Because these people are not, they don't feel real. You know, so I'm just sort of throwing that out there because, like I say, it's come up a number of times. And, you know, so if you think that maybe you're dealing with people that don't seem to be real, it may be that you're not dealing with people that seem to be real. They're just marking the place on the timeline until it gets the timeline either switches back, or the person who's on that timeline that's running parallel all of a sudden catches the energy and is over on this timeline. So I can't answer it. I'm just throwing this out on the table that, you know, there's these concepts that we've been playing with.
Well, to me it makes sense, because if I look at it from the point of view that every author out there, author and teacher, instructor, they tell you that the physical body is nothing more than a hologram. So if it's nothing more than a hologram, is there a rule that says you can only project one of each? I think not. If we accept that there are parallel realities, that tells me that this hologram can be projected over and over multiple times. It's just that which hologram are you choosing to sit most of your consciousness in? You could have this particular hologram in this particular life timeline have, I don't know, 90% of your awareness or 90% of your consciousness, and the rest is spread out in other parallel holograms. And like you said, as you're switching realities or switching timelines, eventually you'll decide, okay, I'm going to sit in this one. This one's got the elements that I like. This timeline is my favorite. It also explains why when you go to the supermarket, sometimes I shake my head because it's like I'm dealing with organic robots. There's like an automated system just responding and going through the motions, but it doesn't look like there's anybody home.
Well, that's what we're perceiving. And my question is this always been in existence, or have we gotten past some kind of a threshold where those of us that are awake, that do believe we're playing reality games, that we are so powerful as to be able to control reality, that we are giving ourselves the right to play in this arena? Are we in a situation where we are the real people and we are blowing past all the rest of them, so that in order for us to continue and think that we're still playing the game, they've got all these markers in there?
Well, just to answer your question with an illustration, what's the number one condition you have to meet to be able to look at a picture on the wall? How can you look at a picture on the wall or in a museum?
You have to be standing up.
You have to be outside of the picture, looking at the picture. If you're part of the picture, you don't know that you're in a picture, right? Because the picture is your universe. The picture is your reality. So that milkmaid or whoever is in the picture, that's their universe. They're not aware that they're inside a picture. So in order for you to be aware that you're looking at a picture, you have to be an observer outside of it. And I think this is happening more and more. We are becoming observers outside of whatever used to be the law of one. Materials are the ones who coined this term consensus reality, meaning the reality that most people agree on, which doesn't necessarily have to be my reality. So I could be outside of that looking in, and I can see them like you would look at a fish tank. And you would see, you know, the fish moving back and forth. Well, that's their reality, their little universe. I don't have to be there. And I think what happens is that also plays into the loneliness most of us have felt growing up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, that you're outside looking in because you're in a level of consciousness where you see the behavior of people or the things that they find of value. And you say, how can you find it of value to have this dress? That if you don't have this dress, you're going to die. Oh, I have to have this dress. This is it. This is the meaning of life, that if you don't have this dress, you're going to die. And that, coupled with everything else, like celebrity worship and all the things that humans consider priceless, and you look at it like, what's going on with these people? Why are they thinking this way? Why are they giving value? And In my life experience, I found how fake all of that was and how much of a movie it was. I tried to join. I wanted to be one of the group. I wanted to belong somewhere in this world where I could say, okay, this is my group, or these are my people, or this is my life. And I couldn't. I couldn't fit in because I was actually able to see the fabric of the reality, and I could act, play the role, but I guess they could see right through me. I wasn't really part of that reality. And all I could do was stand outside looking in. But now the difference is that there's more of me in the form of you. You're seeing the same thing. You're standing outside looking at other people's reality and scratching your head.
Yeah, I mentioned that to you in an email, that basically what we're doing is that if we have to be alone and we have to march through life, this being alone really outside of the picture, you know, we don't know, we can't even get in the picture. But then if we're succeeding, then we come together as a group. And, you know, as you're drawn into this group, now the group is becoming our family and getting more powerful because we're seeing reality as it really is. It's a picture on a wall.
Yeah. And but our consensus is that we're all in agreement. It doesn't matter what form or shape or what elements are in the reality that each one of us chooses for ourselves, but they all have the same underlying theme. Sovereign free will. That my reality is my reality and I call the shots because it's my experience. And if I don't want that experience, I do not consent to that experience. I will not sign energy contract to have that experience. I don't care how much you want to force it onto me. We've already played that game. We've already been inside that movie. So now all of us are coming together with that underlying common theme. We believe in each other's sovereign free will. We respect and honor each other's free will, that we choose what experience we want to harvest without imposing our experience on anybody else. And that makes all the difference. I'm not the leader of any group. You're not the leader of any group. We're just coming together with this one thought in common. We're all sovereign free will beings, and we have a right to choose the reality and the experience we wish to experience without anybody else saying, oh, no, it's not that way, it's this way.
Well, JP and I got into a conversation about this very thing, because what I had missed in the concept of free will was that you're accepting that everybody's got free will. So you don't want to step on somebody's free will. But Jay pointed out that free will really entails that you have responsibility for your own reality.
Well, definitely.
In my reality, everybody around me is going to be happy and joyful sooner or later. You know, and if you want to be miserable, well, then be miserable on your reality. Don't bring your miserableness over to my reality. And if you're going to force it on my reality, then I'm going to just say, you stay over there and I don't need to deal with you.
Yeah. And JP is right on the money, because one of the things that the old matrix made us do is live on automatic. I mean, I don't care if nobody agrees with this concept, but I have witnessed it forever. People live their lives in automatic. As long as they're doing their job, as long as they're paying their bills, as long as they come home and have dinner and watch TV, that's it. That is their reality. That is their existence. And they go through life on automatic. And every day is Groundhog's Day. It's a carbon copy of the previous day. And the years go by, and then you wonder, where did my children go? Where did my life go? And they spend whatever remaining time is left, you know, reminiscing about the happy old days when you were a teenager or when you just got married, because life just passed you by. You were on automatic. But if we accept the simple truth, you have to go to the bathroom every day. You have to eat every day. You have to, you know, keep your house nice and tidy at least, you know, 2-3 times a week. It's a daily thing. You have to breathe every day, every moment, right? I mean, I don't know people that go to sleep and shut off their heart and their lungs. I guess advanced yogis would do that. So as long as you have the requirement of life, that life requires you to have this daily activity, why can't choosing reality moment by moment be one of my required activities? I mean, it's not killing me. It's not like it's, oh my God, I've just spent all this energy molding my reality today. No, it doesn't. It's not like that at all. When you wake up in the morning and before you get out of bed and you're looking at the ceiling or the wall or whatever, you make a declaration. Even if there's somebody with you in bed, you can say it out loud. Okay, today is going to be a fantastic day. Today I'm going to be abundant. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be peaceful. Today everything is going to go my way. And that's it. Your cells in the body are listening to this. Your subconscious is listening to this. And you just made a declaration of intent. This is going to be my day. I don't care what circumstances I see or witness. This is my day. And as you get used to doing it, it just becomes second nature. You don't get out of bed until you make your daily declaration. And that's it. That sets the pattern and it sets the tone and the energy, and you're molding your reality. It's not like you don't have to meditate 5 hours in order to establish this is going to be my reality. First off, I wouldn't want my reality to be made of rock, unchangeable. This is my set and my intention. Who knows? Throughout the day, something better might even show up. because the intention is there that you want this day to be fabulous. So it gets even more fabulous. And it's a daily activity, like brushing your teeth, like putting on your clothing, you're like taking off your clothing. It's a daily activity, no different than any other daily activity that you undertake. Right?
Yes, and that, but that predisposes that you are comfortable in your own mind. You know, this automatic thing, it goes very deep. I mean, they don't... People who are asleep, they don't want to think. How many times, if you go, if you're driving in traffic and you look around, everybody's on a phone or texting.
Oh,
they're not
definitely.
Even talking to the people next to them because yep. they can't stay. They don't know who they are. They have no clue, and it scares them. It's like this void of I don't know who this is. So I have to keep moving and doing because I don't want to confront the fact that I don't even know who the hell I am. And that's the major problem that people have. And you know, it's like, if you cannot be your own best friend, if you cannot talk to yourself, I mean, one of the things that just absolutely pisses me off is when people say, "You don't talk to yourself. You'll sound like you're crazy." How the hell are you going to know who you are if you're not talking to yourself?
Yeah. I always tell people, it doesn't matter if you talk to yourself. The important thing, are you listening? That's when you get in trouble.
I only listen half the time.
Right.
I only listen half the time. It makes it interesting.
Yeah.
So, listen.
Well, have you seen teenagers having lunch at the school cafeterias? They're all on the phone.
Texting.
But the funny thing is that they're texting each other.
Yeah.
They're texting the friend that's next to them. So,
let's have a little break because we're way past the hour mark. Anyway, listen. This is Van Morrison. I love this song. This is a lovely old song for me. I'll try not to cry. It's called "Someone Like You." Van the Man. Oh yes, Van Morrison, always a winner. So where were we, Walt? Somewhere, where were you? You had Nancy. Okay, the Cube. Okay, so we've been talking a little bit about the Merkabah and the root of that word, which is obviously a very ancient word. It's got like Kabar and Kar and Bar and Mer and all the elements and all of this stuff. So you've got, I don't know if this was a private message, but tell us about the biometer and the level of the consciousness, and you know, how can you tell the can you measure my level of consciousness? Can you tell me whether I'm just being a complete idiot or
can I get a second to go grab it?
Does it work?
can you
do it over Skype?
Go get it.
Go get it. Let's do it. Let's put it right out there. Let's give it to him. The biometer is a device he'll explain to you in a minute, but it actually will give indications of a conscious level. And when he did it with the Shungite, he got like 18,000, which he had only seen, you know, 870 any time prior to that, and it was normally doing it for a group or whatever. So
now, hang on a second. 870 was measuring what?
Conscious. It's now we have to ask him this, because this is a question I have. I know it's some kind of a measurement chart, like, okay. That then he asks with a pendulum, what's the consciousness level? And he gets a reading, and that reading indicates a certain, there's different areas of it that have consciousness questions and other things. But it's, and I don't know where this information comes from. We have to ask him about that, because it's like, where did you get this chart? But when he gets an answer, and it's in the frequency of consciousness, the Shungite by itself, it provides an extraordinary increase in consciousness. And so, you know, he keeps playing with different geometric structures to see the changes that the Shungite will go through, or the changes that in the different fields.
Okay, I'm back.
There he is. Okay, good. Now, before you start this, Walt, yep. I was saying to Jay that I needed, because I've not asked this before from you, I know that the biometer is like a charting system, right?
Uh-huh.
Where did the information come from? How did you get this chart? Tell me more about the chart itself.
Well, I read about it in a book, but unfortunately the book that I was reading was not offering any charts. So I started looking in the web. If you do a Google image search and just put the word biometer, you will see different versions of it. I don't know if they have different authors. Some are linear, others are circular. This one has about, I think, 270 degrees, because that way, when the pendulum swings, you won't be able to mistake the answer, because it can only swing in a, it can only point to the one value. There's nothing behind it. It's not a complete circle. This particular one that I was able to find is all written in French. So I don't know who's the author in particular, but the values match what I had read in the book about it. I know the biometer was developed, I think it's a contemporary of, remember that Dr. Hieronymus Galen, who's the first one who developed the first radionics box? I think it was, when was that? Late 1800s? Well, I know that he was aware of the biometer, because, as you know, you have to be, it's good to be a dowser if you're going to be working in radionics. They kind of dovetail each other. Sorry that can't offer any more info than that, I guess. But as I said, you can do an image search for biometer on Google and you'll get lots of images. And so far, to me, it gives me a point of reference to find out. I used it on the Shanghai experiments, and that's how I was able to see that. Remember when you found for the EMF attenuation, you had like a threshold of 15 grams. As you were approaching 15 grams, you kept getting better and better, and then once you hit 15 grams, any additional pieces did not improve much.
Right. I had energy sensitive people. I did two different groups, and we all came to the same conclusion. We could feel a jump in the energy. As soon as you put a shungite on the EMF system, you immediately feel a jump. I said we only need one, but then, you know, I had people saying, oh, you need more, so I said, well, let's just try it out. So we put it up at 15 grams. Anything above that, we did not feel a jump. So
okay.
Yes.
So by the same token, just like you did that test, I used the biometer to ask the question when I was putting shungite on different type of coils, and that's how I found out. Every time I would add a piece, the value would increase, and then 3 was the threshold. And the interesting thing is that it didn't matter the size of the specimen. It could be a small chip, it could be the large chunk that you sent me. Still, 3 was the number, and that's why the next day after I had done that experiment is when I had a chance to visit my guides in a journey, and I asked, you know, why this 3? And that's when they said those words, which I did not understand, that you needed 3 to achieve coherence. And it made me think in terms of triangulation. When I studied topography, I remember triangulation, but I don't know. I guess it merits more investigation, more testing. The chart itself is graded from 1,000 to 100,000, and for example, between 2,500 and 5,000 are those values indicate pathologic biologies like viruses and bacteria and microbes and micro parasites would be in this area. From 6,000 to 10,000, it's physical energy. From 10,000 to 13,500 is etheric energy, or the human aura. And from 13,500 to 100,000, that whole range they label as spiritual energy. So when I did that test, that I made the that device that you call the shungite spiral, when I asked what was the level of consciousness of the assembly as a whole, because as you know, the spiral by itself is generating a field with the same axis as shungite, and now you have a piece of shungite in it, where the argon is flowing through the shungite, which makes the flow four times faster than the speed of electricity. So one is amplifying the other. And when I asked what is the level of consciousness of this assembly, it said 18,000. And well, you have since received yours, and you've had your experience that you explained to me how it meshed with your Earth computer that you have in your room. So I guess that showed that how strong it is. And this afternoon I was asking, okay, what is the level of consciousness of the cube that I'll be shipping out to Florida? And it said 30,000. Since you can connect to things and people and places remotely, I guess you can do your own confirmation of whether this is so or not.
Oh, I've been watching it since we talked about it in the future. I know what it is.
Okay.
That's the beauty about, you know, accepting that that everything is fluid, is that you can go to the future and just look at things and start working with them here. It's like it's that affirmation that I tell people to do. Always put it in the future. Lock it into the future, because then everything will work to get there.
And the other evidence that I have that I want to get this out of here as fast as possible, because I'm tired of having a sunburn on my face. If even for those that don't believe in dowsing and don't believe that you could get an accurate read from the biometer, what about getting a sunburn when there's no sun in the sky? For 2 days we had clouds and rain. When I was putting together, it all started when I was making the skeleton for this thing. I have a sunburn on my face like I've been sleeping under 4 hours under the summer sun. That's why I told you in that email I should have worn a welding mask. It's so strong. I just run into the workshop to get this chart to bring it back into my room, and just that in and out of the workshop, my face is burning again. So I just want to pack it up and get it out of here.
Okay, we'll talk about that. Yeah.
So you want me to ask what's JP's level of consciousness? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jay, you there?
JP?
It might be about 12 or 16.
It might
be as high as 21 today. I don't know.
I want your permission, because otherwise I can't intrude on your energy field.
You have my permission.
Okay, thank you.
To measure my energy thing.
So you want level of consciousness or level of energy?
Well, yeah, whatever you do with it.
Okay, according to this, your level of physical energy is 8,000, which puts you in the healthy range. Below 6,500 is when illness manifests.
Well, that sounds good. Sounds all right. Not bad. I eat healthy.
And level of consciousness is putting you at 14,000, which is the beginning of the spiritual scale.
That'll do.
So, strong character, huh?
Is it? I don't know.
I think so.
I have no idea what to measure against.
I have in groups, I have asked, you know, what is the level of consciousness of this person, and I get like 8,000, which is physical energy. So maybe I was asking about one of those placeholders that Nancy mentions. There's no consciousness in it; it's just an image.
Maybe that's what I am. Maybe that's who JP is. Just an image. Just a reflection of your.
Jay, you're the most real person that I deal with. Seriously, I mean, you know, no. JP is a highly evolved and connected person who is also very grounded, and that gives him a tremendous amount of power. That's what I think. Okay, Walt, I don't want you to read me.
Okay.
Because
I don't want to even try. I don't want to try either.
So. That kind of freaks me out. However, you could do a reading of the group, couldn't you? Of the three of us.
The three of us?
Yeah, can you do that?
Energy or consciousness?
Both. And is it additive or is it generative?
I don't know if it's going to be... Well, it depends on my question. I can ask, what is the average energy of this group?
And what is the total energy of this group?
Okay. What is the total energy of this group of Nancy, JP, and myself? I'm getting 18,000.
Which is just at the beginning of the spiritual? What does that mean then?
Well, I think that's very large, because physical energy ends at 10,000 and spiritual energy begins at 14,000, so we're right up there in the spiritual energy range.
And you said total, right?
That's the way you asked me.
Okay, no,
What is the total energy of the group?
Yeah, I was just clarifying it. But that was the total energy. Now can you do the total consciousness level?
Okay, let's see.
I wish this machine made a sound like a moo or something.
Tick-tock.
Sound effects.
Tick-tock, tick-tock.
There's slowly rising swanny whistles.
Okay. It's pointing to 60,000.
16, 1, 6?
No, 60.
60. 60? What
yes,
does that
mean? Ma'am. Well, the scale ends at 100,000.
You know, I really regret that I didn't have you do a reading on my conscious level before I received the Shungite spiral. Because, actually, even before I received it, before I ever saw the thing, because when you showed it to me on Skype, it was like, I was like, you know, what is this thing? And then within 36 hours of that, I realized I had had an amazing jump in consciousness that was, it was tactile. I mean, I could actually feel it. It was like all of a sudden my ability to focus, to be directed, although sometimes today it didn't sound like that. But I mean, I just had, because I play these mind games, I focus on, okay, you're in charge of your own reality. But if you get to a level where you understand the full impact of it, then you're going to say, okay, my reality is not just my own little life here. My reality is this entire biosphere. And because I am so connected to all this biosphere, I'm going to say that the reality in this biosphere is going to stop being whoever is running it now, and it's now going to be mine. I'm the boss. And because I know that that's stupid, because I'm just a human being, even though I have followed the rules of cosmic reality, I understand the rules of cosmic reality, I've integrated them into my life, so yes, I am more stable and balanced than a lot of people, but still, I'm not a fool. So I say, no, not me, it's Gaia. It's the Earth Mother. You know, and so I put all my faith in the fact that she has complete control. And all I have to do is say, whatever reality that Gaia has got, which is going to be much more detailed and intense than anything I could possibly imagine, she's the one that can see it all. And I'm just buying into the reality that Gaia is projecting. And because... to me, we have to really commit to that. It's not just getting up in the morning and saying, I'm going to have a great day. It's getting up in the morning and saying, I'm going to spend the rest of my day actually thinking about the necessity to put thought and power and energy into the concept of Gaia's in charge and she knows what she's doing.
Now, where does that put your declaration of dominion over the earth that you said that to get help?
Yes, I told Walt a story that happened back that would have been 1989, and it was a very complicated situation in that, like I say, there's all sorts of levels. But anyway, I came to the realization that we were actually under attack by a group of extraterrestrial beings who I call the Marauders. They have been raiding Earth for green tourmaline for
a great day.
I don't know how long. And green tourmaline is the male essence of the balance of the planet. You've got the pink tourmaline and you've got the green tourmaline. And tourmaline is a composite of many, many different colors, including blacks. But the green and the pink are an energy frequency that helps balance the Earth. And so as they mined this and they took out more and more of the green, the masculine energy of the planet has decreased, which I could argue is a good thing. But however, they were doing it, and they were doing it within the legality of the galactic laws and regulations, because nobody on this planet, no human being on this planet, had the conscious awakening to understand that nobody was in charge. Nobody said, "This is our planet. You stay out of here." And had an understanding of the responsibility of having dominion over the planet. So when I realized all of this, I said, "So what you're saying to my guides?" I said, what you're saying is that it only takes one human being to acknowledge dominion over the planet, that my entire beingness is responsible for doing positive, beneficial things for this planet. That's all. It just takes one. And they said, yes, it only takes one. And I said, fine, I'll claim dominion in the name of humanity over the planet. At that moment, they had an open, then I had to say, and would you please help us? Because the prime directive, which they talk about in Star Trek, because it's all so intricate. It's all thought is, and coincidence is all thought and action. So you've got this interesting little dance that's always going on. But that concept of the prime directive, that you can't mess with somebody else's planet, okay? The galactic people out there that would help us fight off these marauders couldn't do anything until somebody claimed dominion and then gave permission for them to protect the planet. And so that's what happened. And the reason the marauders, so intricate. The reason the marauders had made that decision to make this out and out attack against the planet. They appeared not to be the most evolved species out there. But the reason that they had decided they had to do this was that there was a lot of indication, and if you think back in the 89, there was a lot of this belief that I can't even think of all the... There were different events and this is happening and that's happening, and, there was a lot of change of energy and timelines in that particular period of time. And so it was becoming obvious to the marauders that somebody was going to wake up and claim dominion, and that if they did, then they couldn't raid the planet for the green tourmaline anymore. So that was why they made the move when they did, and then of course, they got through to me, and I won't get into that story. It's long and it's not really necessary as to how they got the information.
Have they been stopped? That's my question.
Oh, the marauders? Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, as soon as I declared it, they just took off because they knew the game had been up. It was a gamble on their part, and they basically tried to jam the signals that I would have gotten from my guides to understand this, and because of a psychic, the scrambler was disabled, and so the messages got through.
Mm.
I mean, I, like I say, in writing Cosmic Reality, I never would have gotten into a lot of things I got into in Down the Rabbit Hole. I never would have said them, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. But there was a lot of stuff that I held back in the writing of that book, because it, even now I'm telling you the stories. But it's a point of demonstrating how far we've come, how fast.
Yeah.
If we can talk like these things, and people don't say, oh, Nancy's crazy. Well, they may, some of them may, but most of them know, and I don't think she is, because she talks a lot of stuff that is absolutely provable, never mind the stuff that she's saying, I know it's real because I experienced it. You didn't experience it, so don't tell me it's not real. Mm-hmm. You know, I experienced. That's the difference between belief and knowing. You know, belief is, I think it could be this way. Knowing is, I experienced it. You know?
Correct.
And too many people have these experiences, but they don't address them. They don't integrate them. They don't talk about them. And, you know, so I don't know how we got on that thing. But I did look up the word cohesion, because in reference to the three Shungite, and the definition...
They said coherence, yeah. Coherence, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, coherence, not cohesion?
Yep. No.
Coherence, well, that's one.
And when they said that, I saw in the space before me, there were like three pieces floating, and then they were replaced by three holes of the same shape, and you could see through the holes into some kind of continuum where you could see all this light moving back and forth. So my understanding my limited understanding, I guess, at the moment was that you needed three to make a coherent window into the other side to get that energy in, because, you know, Shanghai is a perfect portal to bring energy from the continuum. So that's why in my testing, the difference was that in the AccuVac straight coil, the amplification was linear. You would get one and then one more and then one more as you added the pieces. But in the implosion coil, like the spiral that you have, the amplification was exponential. It would go 2, 4, 6, 8. It was a greater amplification when you use the three pieces.
Okay, now you said coherence.
Uh-huh.
C-O-H-E-R-E-N-C-E.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first definition is the quality of being logical and consistent. The quality of being logical and consistent. And the second one is the quality of forming a unified whole. Forming a unified whole.
So you need three to do a unified whole field for that particular unit?
Would seem to me, yeah.
Oh. Okay, well, I got those instructions. I did a journey for a gentleman in Tasmania, and they want me to make for him one of my genies in a bottle devices that you saw on Facebook. But at the bottom of each coil, they don't want a single piece of Shanghai. They want three pieces at the bottom of each tube. They were very specific. So I guess that's another confirmation about what I got told on the other time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah, well, so Walt sends me this Shungite, I call it the Shungite spirit spiral, because that's essentially what he was working on, is enhancing the spirit of Shungite, the field. And so I get it here, but I've been working with it. So it wasn't like I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is incredible. I'd actually been working with it. I had felt that I had a jump in consciousness. And two other people also commented to me that something had changed and they felt like there was a conscious change. And I said, well, that's because Walt made this thing. And it resonated as being true with them. So when I got the piece here, and it's not very big, it's, you know, fits in the palm of my hand. And I played with it for a bit, and then I said, okay, where do you want to go? And it wanted to go into the bedroom. And I'm going like, okay, where do you want to go in the bedroom? And it was very specific where it wanted to go. And in fact, oddly enough, there was like a candlestick holder that was made out of jasper that, you know, allowed me to set this spiral, this flat, like if you had a spring and you put it flat, a flat spiral. I had this spiraling coil that I set on top of that, but it was right next to a, first off, the bottom piece is about 9 by 6 inches of quartz that's got, it's pointed. So it's all pointed quartz, but it's quartz crystal. And on top of that is a huge pile of different stones and minerals. I mean, you name it, it's probably in there. And so I went, okay, fine, and I you know, set it up like that. And then a couple of nights later, and I was working with it, but a couple of nights later, a friend came over, and I said, oh, I got to show you what Walt sent me. And I started to get up to get it, and I got this download, don't you touch that. And I was like, why? And all of a sudden, I got another download of what had happened. And what it was that being guided by Gaia for now decades, seriously, of stone collecting and mineral collecting, I had all these pieces of a component that then she had me bring together and put together in this you know, pile of minerals and stones. And then she has Walt send me this thing, this device, that when it was put where it was, it turned on this entire natural computer. It's some kind of a device. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind about it. I told you that when I first got it and set it up, I said, it's like it's dancing. I said, they're having a party in there. Well, then I realized it wasn't a party. It was that they were turning on this entire system. And so, I mean, every night when I go to sleep, I connect with the spiral. And as soon as I make this connection, it, you know, and sometimes it's like I get other thoughts in and I'll start to make it and then other thoughts come in. But when I make that connection, man, I'm out. You know, next thing I know, I'm waking up. But I continually am aware that when I am making this kind of a connection, I am feeling a reprogramming going on. That something's happened inside my head. It's like, you know, it's like every day I get up and I think, oh, I think I'm a little smarter. Just because I connect to this device, which is a consciousness enhancer.
Can you send me about 5?
Well, I sent you a Skype message that I wanted your shipping address so I could send you a resonator for you to put in your power, but you never responded.
Did I not?
You did not, sir.
How remiss of me. I will remedy the situation as soon as the show is over.
I dub thee Lord Remus of Forus.
Actually, if you send it to JP, Forres, Scotland, it'll probably get it.
Oh.
Well, you can't do that.
Maybe not.
You have to have exactly the information because you got to get it through customs.
Yeah.
And so what you're going to put is a mineral specimen. That's all you have to put. Mineral specimen. Because, and sample. That is a sample.
Send me the address in the chat so I can just copy-paste it.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah, because that way it gets through customs without any kind of a problem. And no duty or any of that stuff.
I sent a specially designed pyramid to India, and it took literally a month. It was here in U.S. Customs for like a week.
Yeah, because if they see something, all these containers go through X-ray machines. And if they see something that looks odd, you know, and maybe you might have the same problem with a spiral in it.
Last one I shipped to Canada, I shipped 8 resonators, and I just put in the duty form copper coils. That's it.
That's a good one then. Put copper coils. That might work better. Yeah, because like I don't. Well, actually, I do. I ship copper coils with all of my shungite.
That's right.
Mineral
copper coils with mineral resonators.
Yeah.
What is it? Mineral samples? Did he say? What is
mineral
it?
Samples? Yes. Mineral specimens, and then they have a thing. Is it a gift? Is it merchandise? Is it sample? Oh, that's for businesses. Most people probably wouldn't see that. So you put, you know, gift.
I just put gift because I don't want the receiver to be saddled with custom chargers.
Right, right. Well, it is a gift. JP isn't going to pay
yeah.
it for.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't pay.
I'm going for the exposure here. I'm going for the exposure here.
That's right. That's right. We're false advertising. I got to get you linked to my store, so that they'll know to go through me to you.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Do you have a website, Walt, with your stuff?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Let me type it for you.
Now read it out for the audience as well.
It's the three words altogether: new paradigm tools. .com. And paradigm is PARADIGM. I went to pick up some tubing that I needed for the cube, and the girl said, oh, here's an order here for new paradigm tools.
And did you say that's my tubing?
So I said, no, it's pronounced paradigm. I feel kind of sorry that I chose such a difficult name, because I was just going for what it was, you know, stuff for the new paradigm.
I know. If you can't spell paradigm, you shouldn't be doing it. Shouldn't be at the slide.
You shouldn't be looking at this. Move along.
No, I'll get a link up on the. Actually, I do have you linked on where we have the radio programs, and but I'll get you in the store so that, you know, as long as you got shungite in the device, I'll link you.
Well, the thing is that I have no control over it. Now the people's guides are asking for it. So, like, there's another little cube that I have to go tomorrow and buy another gallon of resin, because the Gulf cube actually took 90% of my resin. And, for a lady in Canada, her guides indicated a cube with a specific size coil and shungite in the center, so I said to myself, oh, now they're asking, you know, all these different guys are asking for it. I guess it must be really good.
Yeah, its time has come.
So that's what I think. That's what it wants bodies to play with.
Just so people who don't know you, Walt, explain that you take these journeys and you know. What is it that they can come to your website for regarding how you can assist them with the guides and finding out what they need to know? Just go through it so they understand.
Oh, yes. When they go to the website, you'll see there's a catalog on the right-hand panel of different devices. These are the usual devices that I offer that have come through visions and inspiration. I don't sit down to think, oh, what am I going to do today that would be nice and attractive? I don't do that. I just keep getting images in my head, and that's why the information there in the website is anecdotal in nature, because I'm telling the story of how this came about. So about 3 years ago now, one of the people who bought two of my pyramids offered to introduce me to shamanic journeys, and I took him up on the offer, and he sent me drumming music and gave me some basic instructions, and I was able to do the journeys based on his instructions, and I would report back to him. And one of his comments that he did on several emails is, you've done this before, because it looks like it's very second nature to you. And before him, I had heard of the word shamanism and shamans, but I was never interested in researching the subject at all. But what was interesting, he told me that he had studied the course from Michael Harner, which is one of the foremost people in this country that is going around doing workshops on shamanism. So I went out and I bought the book, The Way of the Shaman, which is a good introductory book to the whole universe of what shamanism is. And in the first chapter, he describes when he was in Central America somewhere. He was in some jungle and he had a chance to stay there with the natives, and that's when he had a chance to do a journey using ayahuasca, which, as the book explains, is actually a poison. Somebody has to be there on standby with the antidote as you finish the journey, because otherwise you're not coming back. And I couldn't put the book down, because in the journey where he describes the creatures that he saw in the lower world, I had actually seen that 2 days before in a journey that I took. And I wrote it to Brad and told him, you know, is there such a thing as the underworld? Because I kept going down below the lower world and I saw these very ancient creatures made of darkness, and they're fed up and they want to get out. And I did what I could at the time based on what I knew. And here, 2 days later, I'm reading this book, and the book is describing the same creatures in the same place who are claiming the same thing. And I'm thinking, what the heck is this? So that was very surprising, to experience the content of a book before you read it. So where does that take us to the website? Is that I thought, okay, this is a good tool to use to help people, in the sense that if my guides are giving me instructions and inspiration on devices to make that people can use and benefit from, why can't I just go and talk to that person's guides and see what they need? So I would ask people for their express permission. I undertake the journey. It takes about an hour or so. And normally I'll go to the upper world to meet the person's guides and ask them. In three occasions, they have told me outright, there's nothing that you make that will help them now, but please give them this information. So I have done that in the past. Either they'll have a long message for the person, or in two different cases, they told me, give them their human design because they can benefit from that, which I did. I would give them an overview of their design. And lately, the other thing that I have witnessed, my head count is up to five now, the last one being this gentleman from Tasmania, where the person's guide is not in the upper world, which is one of Gaia's timelines, but they're in a ship in orbit. And I'm not, in the beginning I was very surprised. I'm not surprised anymore. I guess I'm getting used to seeing it. So many souls have come to the planet to help the situation here that, yeah, they're spiritual guides and in a ship in orbit. And the last visit was a confirmation of what I had mentioned to you before, the power of the Shangri. I could not go. The last few journeys have been very easy because I've asked the spirit of Shanghai to come with me, and it totally facilitates going into the different timelines. It makes it easy and resistance-free. But when I had to go meet these guides, I could not get there until the spirit of Shanghai said, you have to go to the upper world by yourself. So when I met these people in the ship in orbit, I said, why couldn't I see you? And they said, oh, it's your companion. And the man said, if he does not rein in his energy field, he can compromise systems in the ship. So that was very astounding, that this thing could be so powerful that it can actually bring down a ship if it wants to. So, and it was confirmation of that other thing that I had told you about, that etheric airship that got disintegrated.
Yeah. So anyway, if you want to go over to Walt's website, which is newparadigmtools.com, I'll have it on cosmicreality.net. I'll put, well, there it is linked there, but I'll make it a link you can find easier. You can get a shamanistic trip with him to be able to get real guidance from your guides if you don't hear them. And perhaps you can you know, ask to hear them if you want, but at least you'll get the messages that, that Walt will bring back for you. And if you're lucky, he might have a device that that your guides want you to work with. So it's a different way of learning and expanding your consciousness. So what else? We got about 6 minutes left, is that right?
No, about 3 minutes left, really.
Minutes.
So it's been a very interesting little journey today. Thank you very much for coming with me. It's a nice thing to sit around in a summer afternoon around the campfire to keep the midges away.
Hot chocolate next time, please.
Sorry, I didn't share any.
And marshmallows.
I've been caning the shit. Anyway. Sorry, I turned into Bob Dylan there a second. So, Walt Silver from New Paradigm Tools and Nancy L. Hopkins from CosmicReality.net. All your Shungite needs met in one place.
And more.
And on New Paradigm Tools, you've got all sorts of funky things that you can buy. Is that right, Walt?
I don't stock anything. So whatever you order, I have to make just for you.
Yep. And he's got a gallon of resin. So.
And I know what to do with it.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you,
it's
JP.
It's been a very interesting journey today.
Appreciate you guys.
Bless you all. Good night, everybody.
Good night, JP. Good night, Nancy.
Night, Walt.